his muscles go through, probably they were, but it's not the book. I don't know, I think that's the beginning of the internet, you know, I'll decide that tomorrow what it is, and then, some muscles, but it looks more like a cyber pattern beginning. The woodpeckers wouldn't think of making a mud nest. They just find a hole in a tree and crawl in there and have their young. It's very interesting to study different nest sites and types of nests. It's a study in itself. This is a hairy woodpecker. People say, well, look at the red on his back. That must make him a redheaded. No, the male hairy and the male downy have that little speck of red and should not be ever confused with the redhead. Now, some of the plants, we're still in the drywood, some of the plants that grow there are these club mosses. I mentioned the word before. This is how they look as they come up through the dead leaves. They don't look very interesting, but I will tell you a good story about them out on the trail, which I think will impress you with their importance. Opposite the club mosses, as we start out, we're going to see this flower in blossom, the lady slipper, or people sometimes call it the pink moccasin flower. A very beautiful spring flower, I think you'll agree. Farther down the trail, we'll see Jack and the Pulpit. The woodland ones, the dry woodland ones, are a little bit different from the swamp ones, which you're going to see. The spring beauty is a plant that we found in some place, and as you see, it has done so here. It makes a whole carpet on the forest floor. Close to, you can see why the plant gets its name of spring beauty. It's a beauty that grows in the spring. White petals and pink veins through it. Another plant that is coming out, may be out by now, on our trail is the pinkster. It is an azalea, and some people call it pink azalea for that reason. Well, when we find a red-winged blackbird, we know that we're getting away from the dry woods and we're coming into the cattail marsh because that is the choice of a red wing for nesting. And not only the red wing, but the marsh wren also likes the cattail marsh. This is first cousin to the house wren. The house wren comes to our home and looks for a little place around our houses. The marsh wren wouldn't think of doing that, even though they're in the same family. Marsh wrens go to the marsh, as the name would indicate. And another of the marshes, bird of the marshes, is this little yellow throat. He does have a yellow throat, but the thing to look for is that black mask, because that identifies him against other warblers. An animal of the marsh is the muskrat. You see, it's a smaller animal than the beaver with a rat-like tail. And this is the type of house the muskrat builds in the cattail marsh. By chewing those cattails and piling them up in that fashion, he does make his lodge and also makes a home for the winter. A nice home because he can eat it. He eats himself out of house and home, we say. Now, by breaking down those cattails, you see he's made open water there. That's a good place for the duck plant. Close up, this is how the lodge looks. Some of them nest in the bank of a stream, but These particular ones were down in the marshes. Now here's one of the common ducks that might come in there to land. The mallard duck, which are common even all over the city parks. Now we're going to leave the marsh and come into the true swamp by way of the boardwalk. And this is how the boardwalk was constructed, with logs going one direction and planks going the other. Some of those logs have been lying in the water there now so long that they've begun to rot a little bit. That boardwalk has been built about a year and a half. And if you look at some of those rotting logs, you'll see this fungus, which is called wood rot fungus. And if you don't like that name, you may call it turkey tail fungus, because it does have the appearance of a turkey's tail all expanded when the turkey struts. The lines are similar to annual rings, but as I understand it, are not exactly annual. But as the plant grows, it adds some more rings, you see. Well, let's look out now, not under the boardwalk, but out into the swamp, and we'll see the leaves of this plant. They are edible. The plant has gone by, and the flower has gone by now, but you'll see those big, round, green leaves of the marsh marigold. And if you are interested in survival, maybe some of you boys are in scouts and you're studying about survival. Well, this is an edible plant, the cowslip or marsh marigold. Now, it is called marigold. You see when you look close to the flower that it is not a marigold type. In fact, it's more like a buttercup. And that's the family it belongs to, the buttercup family, not the marigold family. Another of the plants that will be out soon in the swamp is this iris. Now, the iris leaves are quite tall. Those you'll see. And look at them in this picture so you'll know what to expect. Long, thin leaves. And I hope today we'll be able to find some buds because it's getting almost time for these blue flags to come out, blue flag or iris. Now another leaf that you're going to see in great abundance in the swamp is this arrowhead. Notice that big leaf up in the right-hand corner. It looks like an Indian arrowhead, and that's why the plant was given this name. The white flower won't be out for a month or two yet, but the leaves are so common that I think that you people should be able to identify them today. Well, plants along the boardwalk are interesting to some people, but animals are more interesting to others. Green frog, wood frog, of course the wood frog really prefers the wood, but he goes down in the swamp to lay eggs. Leopard frog, see boys, you can't just call them frog anymore. They have first names just like you do. And the next is the tree frog. They are equipped by themselves. They are equipped with suction cups on their feet, which enable them to stay attached to these vertical trunks and live in the trees, actually. Now, they have another protective device, that of, changing color. They can match their background quite easily, changing like a chameleon. Now, even though you can't see these frogs and toads, if you come out in the evening or even after dark, you'll hear them. And how do they make their noise? This is how. They inflate the throat, and when the air is expelled over the vocal cord, the noise is produced. And if you've ever heard frogs, you know there's quite a variety to their noise. From the bullfrog to the spring peeper. This little fellow is about 3/4 of an inch long and makes such a noise in the swamp in the spring. They beep, beep, beep all night long, and sometimes you get 100 of them in a swamp going at once, and you can hardly sleep. Box turtle is one of the reptiles that's quite common. We picked one up last Saturday, and he performed beautifully. They have the ability, you know, to close up just like a box. They have a little hinge on the lower shell, and that tightens up against the upper shell, with the head and feet, of course, pulled in, and is quite a protective device. It's tight as a clamshell. You cannot open that turtle shell. And then, of course, when the harm is passed, they do open. In the first pool of water we come to lives a spotted turtle. I hope he's out this afternoon. I can't guarantee it, but let's hope. We'll look for him anyway. And the snapper we saw right beside the boardwalk last Saturday. They are ferocious. They are not to be picked up. They're big and they do bite.
Oh!
One little snake for the boys. This is the garter snake we talked about before. Harmless, in fact, very useful to man. They sometimes scare the wits out of you when you go into your garden and you see them crawling here, but really, if you think the good they do in eating so many insects, you leave them alone. Another little picture of the fiddlehead. They're so interesting that I thought you'd like to see them in addition to the painting. Looking at them close too, you can see why some people consider them edible. We had a scout leader here from Maine about 3 Saturdays ago, and she told me that it was an annual pilgrimage in her childhood to go out into the woods in the spring and collect fiddleheads, and her mother used to cook them like spinach. Some people put them in salads, those fiddleheads.
I think
we're going through a part of the trail that all the boys and girls like, which we call Mountain Laurel Ridge. And Mountain Laurel is an evergreen. Even though it doesn't have needles like a pine tree, it's still an evergreen. Now here you see it along this trail. The oaks have no leaves yet, and yet that plant is green and has been so all winter. Now if you come back next month, you'll see it in blossom. And a beautiful blossom it has. The Mountain Laurel in blossom. It's related to the rhododendron. But if you know the two plants, you can see the difference. The dogwood, of course, is in blossom now, as you've probably been seeing on your trip. We'll show you some dogwood on the trail. Now, this is a wood row. Remember we said there was quite a bit of lumbering done here 75 to 100 years ago? Well, some of the wood rows are in still pretty good condition. And here you see one of them. I hope that when the Department of Interior, which is the national government, does take over the 3,000 acres, that they will mark those trails, and maybe if you come to the Great Swamp again, you'll be able to hike on them. So far, we have to discourage the public because they're very confusing and people have been lost over on that side of the swamp. Well, here is one of the brooks. There are four in the swamp. This is Black Brook. You see, it's wide enough for canoeing. This is taken quite early in the spring before the true green has come out. You know, when leaves do come out, first in the spring, they are yellowish, not green. Black Brook in the spring.
That flows into the Passaic?
I'm not sure. It probably does act as a tributary because the swamp did drain into the Passaic, yes. And I presume these do. Well, I've never had that question. I've never actually investigated that. Very good question, Mr. Studer. I'll write you when I know the true answer. One of the animals that likes it on the other side of the swamp, in the meadow particularly, is the woodchuck. Although one made a burrow right along our boardwalk. Now, of course, before the boardwalk was built, the burrow was there. But it's a nice, convenient place to see a woodchuck burrow. Mm-hmm. An animal of the meadow, our bird, I mean, is the killdeer. Another one would be the meadowlark, and another one would be the field sparrow. See, a different type of wildlife entirely in the meadow. Well, the last two slides I have are of plants which represent our northern range and our southern range. Now this plant looks like a calla lily. If you've seen them in the florist or at Easter time, if your family has received them, it is not a lily at all. It belongs to the same family as sun cabbage. But this wild calla usually grows in Canada, but was pushed down here, we think, perhaps by a glacier. Well, that is our northern limit then. And this is a picture of beard grass, which is perhaps our southern limit, as far as we know. When you consider the wide range that it represents, you can understand why we expect to have about 500 different flowers in our official collection. It is quite an interesting place, this great swamp, for anybody that likes birds, flowers, a nice quiet walk in the woods. If anybody's interested in flood control, it's an area to study for that purpose. Water samples have their interest. In fact, we are glad it has been saved as a National Wildlife Refuge. Now that is the end of our slide series. I'm going to turn the lights on now and have you people collect your materials and we'll start out on the trip. Which says, come on everybody, take only pictures, leave only footprints. That is the rule of the wildlife refuge. When we take only pictures, it means we don't take a frog or a turtle or a flower or a bird or anything home with us. You may take water samples, you may take soil samples. That is all. The last line refers to litter bugs who are leaving always their Kleenex or their candy wrappers or this wrapper or that wrapper. We leave only footprints. Otherwise, our trail would be not very nice to walk on. All right, that's not the only reason for this stop. Let's look right here. I mean, we really won't have to go any farther than this today to see interesting things.
Stay where you are.
However, we are, and we're just going to make this a quick stop now. Very lowest level.
Don't move, people.
No, stay there.
Stay where you are, and then everybody can see.
Coming up through the oak leaves, just as in the slide, is this little plant, one of those club mosses. This looks like a tree, so we call it tree club moss or ground pine. Green all winter. Now, this is the story I promised to tell you about it. It has been on Earth ever since the dinosaurs. And at that time, these club mosses that I just pointed to grew to the height of trees. And they went into the making of the coal age forest. These and horsetail. Now you're going to see horsetails later, but these are very ancient plants, as are the horsetails which you're going to see on the boardwalk. Back to the dinosaur times you go for their origin. Now they don't grow any taller than this. Through the many years of evolution, they finally diminished in size. Now mixed in with those club mosses, which has been green all winter, you have this little plant which has just now started to come up. You see this green leaf through here?
I'll show it to you better on the other side of the trail. That's what they call Canada Mayflower. Just coming into blossom.
Well, now let's look up another level. And we come to a shrub, which is the commonest shrub in the swamp. And you eat these. Anybody know what it is? Blueberry. Right. Blueberry.
Saw them cultivated yesterday.
Cultivated blueberries yesterday and wild blueberries today. And here's the blossom. Were they out in the cultivated?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Was the blossom like this or a little different?
Like that.
Uh-huh. There are so many different kinds of blueberries. It's amazing. So, blueberry, club moss, Canada Mayflower, and what are the trees up the top? Mainly oaks. And you can stay and study oaks for the rest of the afternoon, but let's only bother with one, and that's the white oak. The bark looks whitish, you see, and you can tell the leaves from other oaks because they're rounded on the edges. Now, let's see, here's one. It's a dead one, but you get the effect. You see how they're rounded on the edges there instead of pointed? That's typical of the white oak group. Now, I told you on the other side of the trail there'd be a lady coming for you to see, and here it is. Have to go down just a little bit to see.
Keep in line, keep in place, then everybody can see.
Wow.
Now, don't bunch up and stay right in line. That's it.
Now, you see right close to the trail is the lady slipper out. They're quite rare. They should not be picked anywhere. And of course,
Danny, please stay there.
One, two, there are three in a row here. And here you see even better that Canada Mayflower because it is coming out. Some people call it wild lily of the valley because it's a little bit like it. Not too much if you look closely, but it has that a little bit that appearance. So the wild lily of the valley out and the pink lady slipper out. Two very, very nice plants. Now we're going to take a long one. You can use up all your energy and draw your tuck. 9 o'clock in between stops.
Over on the meadow side, are there any families that are the old, the people that were here for, say, three or four generations? Or more?
Probably there are. I don't know, actually. I don't ever know.
I want to explore that. I'm interested in the folklore aspect of things.
Really?
I imagine that you probably will find some of the old families there.
Well, I do know this much, that one of the Mason men here is living in his grandfather's house.
Uh-huh.
And that's up, not really on the Great Swamp property. So there must
but
be
in
others.
The area, in the valley,
There must be others.
I just opened up my tape on the pine barren yesterday and got a flood of bird songs.
Oh.
It was...
There isn't too much to see now, but we'll find out if there's
any. Oh, not now.
You want to get that?
Yeah.
You get a much better...
You should
have taken the algae and so forth, I think, along the boardwalk.
Can I go down there?
But let everybody catch up and I'll tell you.
You can get a water sample at the boardwalk where you can just reach down, Johnny.
This little pool of water is a place where the spotted turtle is, and I was looking to see if he was there, but I don't see him. Any of you? Now, don't use your imagination. It's very easy to imagine that you can see a turtle there, but... I don't see him at the moment. Well, anyway, let's discuss the pool of water. It is what we call a kettle hole, which is, again, a glacial formation. The theory is this, that when the glacier did go through here, large chunks of ice broke off and for some reason stayed unmelted for some time, long enough to form a depression in the earth. Now, we find these kettle holes throughout the area, up in Morristown, maybe you've heard of that town, Milburn, Shore Hill, some of those New Jersey towns have kettle holes right in them. Of course, where the bulldozer hasn't been, that is. So these kettle holes are quite pretty common through here. And the interesting thing about them is that they're dry part of the year, and now in the wet season with all the rain and melting snow, they fill with water. So they do support a different kind of life than the kind of pool which is wet all year, you see. As I say, there is a turtle here. There's probably a mosquito eggs in there, too. But nevertheless, I wish somebody would analyze the water sometime and see if there's anything else. Yes?
Is there a special name for that?
That's typical of the true swamp, and they grow on those hummocks, and they are one of the swamp sedges. Now, the sedges are a large family, and I only know a Latin name for this actual species. Do you want the Latin name? Carex stricta. C-R-A-R-E-X is the genus, and then stricta is the species. Now, look on the other side here, boys and girls. You'll see a wood, which was Oh, wait a minute. Before that, we let the birds interrupt us. There's a beautiful wood thrush sitting right on that little low stump.
Oh, yeah, I see it.
That's the thrush with the big brown spots that I showed you on the bird song. That's his call. Now, I have to get off the trail now in order to talk to you. That's something else. That's the wood thrush calling to us.
Hello.
That other is probably the grosbeak.
He's not microphone shy.
Are you picking that up, really?
I hope so. Yes, it's very sensitive.
So we were talking about the forest that had fallen here, of the great birds in the There's so many lying around. It must mean that something happened to the whole wood. Does anybody want to suggest a theory as to what did happen to all these gray birches? Yes. That's always what people... Somebody always suggests termites. What would you suggest?
They probably died and the ground pushed them up.
No, it didn't push them up.
Maybe the area was covered with water and they rotted.
Go ahead, Friday.
Well, probably they died of natural death and then they rotted and pretty soon it turned back there.
That's exactly what's going to happen, but what caused the death to begin with?
They might have just died.
Yes.
Maybe they were tangled up with the rest of the plants.
You're getting warm.
Hey, sunlight. There was enough sunlight.
That's right. Why wasn't there enough sunlight?
Because all the other trees.
You are seeing right in front of you what the ecologist, that's a person who studies interrelationships in nature, what the ecologist calls succession of forests. When you have an open field, what is the first thing to come in? Well, some weeds. And then, a few years later, the shrubs. And then a few years later, the gray birch will be a pioneer tree in that open field. When the pioneer trees are overshadowed by the big climax forest, for instance, look at the oaks. Look at the size they got. When the oaks and the maples and some of the other hardwoods take over, the gray birch just give up. They don't get enough sun. They don't get enough nutrition from the soil. So they become weaker and weaker. They're a good subject for fungus to get into and insects to get into. And finally, the next wind will push them over. Is going to leave these birches lying around the woods just like they are. Because it does make an interesting study. It is more natural. And as this boy said, what are they returning to?
Earth.
And they're producing good, rich soil. This wood, you see, some of it is just about to soil now. And that's very important. You've heard about topsoil, I guess, how important topsoil
is. The leaves will turn the soil pretty soon also.
What is?
The leaves.
That's right, the leaves will turn. There are organisms that help this process. Now, some of the fungus that cause these birches to go back into the soil, you see a few little ones on one that's leaning right there, but you see better ones on this turn in the path up here. Now, before we start, though, I want you to see the dogwood. Right under the leaders are standing right under a dogwood. Look up. And if you look over,
here's one.
Danny, get behind us.
That is out in full blossom all over the state right now.
There you see it at a little distance. You can see the petals.
Here's one, you're right under one.
And here's one right here, Notice the bark.
Ricky, get back in line.
Bracket fungus. B-R-A-C-K-E-T. And the wood thrush is singing right now. When I thought he's doing it. Started it. When I point, I'm not going to point at anything but a wood thrush. That's not the wood thrush, that's a warbler. No. Just when you want them to, they won't.
I heard it.
Yeah. It was quick.
You heard a flute like song.
Yeah,
over here.
Yeah.
Well, listen for it as we go along. Apparently, he isn't going to do it right now.
It was kind of loud.
That's right. Now, there is a little warbler up here. Maybe I can get him for you. I think I see him. Yeah, it's a chestnut-sided warbler.
I see.
Well, I only have sharp eyes because I have 7-power binoculars.
But how can you see? How can you tell that you're
hopping? I saw him flitting. A warbler is a nervous bird. It's a family of very small birds, and they're all a nervous flitting type going after insects high in trees like that, usually. Sometimes you see them down close. this song is typical. It's a little, well, you hear it a little toot-toot-toot like that. I don't think so. I don't think you could get it. Really, no. Do you think he could get it?
No, not for that, no.
The lens will mess it up.
Yeah,
because
you need two lenses.
All right, now we better, let's see, we want to make the, get lead by four, so we better carry him
on.
Tea, but right now he's giving his call note, which is drink, drink, drink.
Drink
he's saying drink your tea now.
Drink your tea.
Sometimes he only says drink tea. Just bought it with the York.
He had a sort of a crown on his head.
You can see Blue Jays.
Oh, I don't
know. The Robin.
Cardinal instead?
Yeah.
That was just a Robin.
Cardinal and Blue Jays are the same. Look at the Blue Jays is blue.
That bird just said drink tea, by the way.
Oh, there it goes. There it goes.
Oh, drink tea.
Drink tea. I
can must be an English bird.
I don't know what else. I might have got another robin. Here's drink tea again. All right, listen now. When my hand goes down, he's saying it.
Oh, yeah.
Drink tea. No, the machine gun hasn't been in it. There's maybe another one that's kind of like one, but that's a real clicker.
That was it. He just
went.
Yeah, he did it then. That's right. I was gabbing.
I saw.
What's
the
bird?
I
see. This says drink tea?
You specialize in it.
On the stock market, and that's all they ever do. They work in the financial section. Then you have people who are sports writers, and they just write only sports. Now, on a small paper now.
What else on this side? Oh, some violets right in here. one eye. There's some yellow black buttercups. No, they're not the marigold.
Yeah, those are the ones.
No, the marigold leaf here. I'll see if I can stick it through.
Classes I've visited, and a whole rack of old, out-of-date newspapers. And from the outside, it's a pink and black building.
Yeah.
Adjacent to Rose Metro Cosmetics. Going to the bank now. George Washington Carver Bank. And we're passing the New York Telephone Company, and we're walking down 125th Street. Most of them were closed, I guess, in respect to President Kennedy. I guess that people in Harlem were surprised. The people in Harlem were surprised to see Ruth Hawkins in Harlem.
That's great.
Federal Savings and Loans Association. It's a new building. It was only built, I think it was completed about a year ago. It has purple and black drapes in memory of President Kennedy. It has also a sidewalk teller. I just, we're in the bank now. It's a blue building. The lights are sort of inside the ceiling. And the floors are just like project floors with a blue and black rug.
Federal Savings, Young America.
We also saw stamps. We're going just in the middle of the floor.
My name is Tom Tudor. I'm direct. You're Mr.
This wall, I can see the wall from here, and it's very nice. Mr. Davis is speaking to us. Meet the president, Mr. Davis, and Mr. Lewis is his assistant secretary. He has a small office, very modern, up to date. And his desk is in a semicircle with two blue mosaic, two mosaic glass chairs. The clock is very modern, and I've never seen anyone like
it. Civil rights, and they're starting from early America right on through contemporary time, and part of that is this trip. We just were at the Courier and had a good interview with one of the reporters there. Okay. We'd like to know, if you don't mind, just what the function of a bank in the Negro area, whether it has any special aims and purposes and so on.
Excuse me, this
one. I don't. We'll be 15 years old in January. That's not very long time for a bank in New York. This bank was founded because 15 years ago,
it was very difficult for Negroes and members of minority groups to get money, to borrow money from banks in order to buy homes. So we try to fill that gap by providing our own financing. It is true that the institution, thank you, was founded by Negroes. Well, correction, we had 14 Negro directors and one white director. Although the majority of the founders were Negroes, it is not a Negro bank. We are Americans, and it's a bank. We pursue banking business just as any other bank. The only thing, we are a very democratic bank. We do not believe, we don't practice what we don't believe in, and that is prejudice in any of its evil forms. We have a thoroughly integrated staff. Our business is done with anyone, white, black, blue, brown, green, any race, any religion. We have, however, been more or less of a guide or a light to some of the older banking institutions that had rather set ideas regarding members of minority groups. They have learned that they have watched our operation over the period of 14 years and have found that we had no problems in doing business with various ethnic groups. We just did business with all groups the same. We made no special way for doing business with Puerto Ricans, Negroes, as Chinese. We treated everyone the same. We have found that it was an excellent policy. We have been rather successful. We have a branch in Brooklyn, and we are opening a branch office at 23rd Street and 8th Avenue in the Chelsea development. We hope to open that in January. That's a rather brief statement. I don't know if I answered your question, sir.
Yes.
Someone would like to ask me a question.
I'd like to go on to one more question, and that is, is there any particular thing you do in relation to housing that helps Negro people?
Well, what we do in housing helps all people. We are a savings institution, and basically a savings institution has a particular function, and we are in existence. Our type of institution is in existence for two specific purposes. One, to provide a safe place for the savings of people, particularly people of the lower and middle income group. We take savings from everyone. The reason I mention the lower and middle income group, there are some banks who will not permit you to have an account in it unless you have a certain amount. Well, we don't have any restrictions of that nature. You can have an open account here for a quarter or a dollar. See? You can save 25 cents a week. So that's one of our purposes, to provide a safe place for people to put their savings. Two, to assist and help anyone who deserves it to buy a home. That's the purpose of our existence. We have no commercial accounts, no checking accounts, etc. Yes, I said worthy. That's a very good question. We make the decision on the basis of whether or not the person is honest, whether he has a job which will warrant our making him a loan, in order that whether or not he can pay back the amount of money we lend him over a period of 15 or 20 or 25 years, whether he is a deserving person. We evaluate the character of the person, not his race, religion, or creed. We would not lend a bum any money, irrespective of who he is. But any honest person who is working and wishes to buy a home and proves that they can pay the money back over a period of years, we will lend them. We determine through the evaluation of the person as a person instead of anything else. Any other question? Did I answer your question, Miss? Any other questions?
I guess my question you answered when you said that you are opening up another one. Apparently this policy is paying off and you're expanding.
We are very it's a little unusual for an institution in 14 years to expand in the manner which we have. We have found that practice in true democracy pays off. Yes?
Excuse me, I was wondering how you take this particular area for your
main. Well, as I said at the beginning, it was difficult for Negroes and other members of minority groups to borrow money from banks in order to buy homes at the time we begun. Consequently, this was the area that we lived in, and we were the greatest sufferers, so we started here.
Now I have one more question. Has this influenced the banking practices of the big bank?
We think it has. For example, today we are getting competition from the big banks for loans that just a few years ago they would not consider making.
Tell me, how much savings do you insure up to?
$10,000. Each account is insured up to $10,000.
Would you say that there's an increase in the number of Negro people going into businesses?
Yes, there is, very definitely. However, in my opinion, it should be stepped up. Business is a very important facet in the trend of living, doing things today. And any ethnic group that does not participate in that important stream is not playing his full share in American life. I believe that the Negro as such is participating more and more in business. However, I personally feel that he's not participating nearly as much as he should. There are reasons. For example, in my opinion, we will say that approximately 80% of all of the college graduates, Negro universities and schools, go into the field of teaching, social work, civil service. They are all very honorable things, but they did that for security. There was no opportunity for Negroes in business. Even the image of the few Negro businessmen was not encouraging to young people like you. However, that situation is changing terrifically today.